Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo and my guest today, Dr. Patrick McGuire. We are waiting for him to call into the studio. So we're just going to get started, go ahead and chat about a little bit of this and a little bit of that so that we can be ready for him when he gets to us. Because I just talked to him a short time ago and I'm sure he's in between offices. I wanted to share with you something that Barbara Dossey said. This is a woman who is very much involved in the medical arena. She's internationally recognized as a pioneer in the holistic nursing movement, and she's the director of the Holistic Nursing Consultants in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And she's also been involved as the international co-director of the Nightingale Initiative for Global Health in Ottawa, Canada, and Washington, D.C. This woman has been tremendously involved in the area of health and has really found a calling in dealing with those people that are ready to make their transitions in life. And she said that it was just so special when she was able to develop an initiative to declare in 2010 an International Year of the Nurse, and in 2011 through 2020, the UN Decade for a Healthy World. This is what Barbara said. She said, "Our combined capacities in collaborative endeavors can heal the earth and its people. With NIGH, I unite with nurses and concerned citizens of the global community to declare our willingness to unite in a program of action to share information and solutions and to improve health conditions for all of humanity, locally, nationally, and globally. We can resolve to adopt personal practices and to implement public policies in our communities and nations, making this goal achievable and inevitable by the year 2020, beginning today in our own lives, in the life of our nations, and in the world at large." Well, our guest today is with us, Dr. Patrick McGuire, MD, and he is, we're going to be talking today about a subject I don't know who has not been touched by it, and that subject is cancer. Dr. McGuire, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure being with you. Now, I was surprised when I got the information on this book, and I believe I met you at the National Publicity Summit this past spring, but there was a degree, your undergraduate degree, that you acquired in English literature from Haverford College, and then you went on to get your doctor's degree from Penn State College of Medicine. Wow,
That's right.
Are two different arenas. What was it that made
you
decide?
They are. You don't have too many future doctors, I guess, in the humanities, but I felt like I was going to be studying enough of the sciences that, and I love to write, and so I really enjoyed my undergrad degree. I think it made me a little bit more well-rounded, maybe.
Well, my goodness, it's really a surprise to find when someone who has gone and dedicated themselves in medicine to have that undergraduate degree. And I agree with you. I think that's a wonderful thing to accomplish. Now, you have been the leader of two multi-million dollar grants from the National Cancer Institute, and this was for improving cancer outcomes for African Americans and the poor in coastal Carolina. Why is it that there was that orientation rather than just something that says, let's take care of cancer on a broad level that would affect everyone?
So I think, obviously, we need to do both. But the National Cancer Institute and the folks in the government really felt like there are a lot of common cancers where our outcomes or survival tend to be worse in patients who are underserved, and that's, you know, includes the minorities. And our main group in North Carolina, where I live on the coast, is African Americans, but it really goes across the board for most minorities, and it includes folks who are in low socioeconomic status, as well as the elderly. And so we tend to make our best advances with cancer with clinical trials, and those groups tend to be enrolled in clinical trials the least. And so that was the government's goal, is to be able to say, when we're going to test a new cancer treatment, we want it to be across the board and apply to all segments of the population.
One of the elements, or I should say points of information, that many people are not aware of is that there are quite literally hundreds of cancers. Am I correct?
That's right.
So
there are lots. Most of them are, you know, the vast majority are the most common cancers, and so that's what, you know, and when cancer hits home, I focus on the top 20, which probably accounts for about the top, you know, about 90 to 95% of cancers. But then you have lots of subtypes of cancers that are less common.
And there's so many different components that come into this. I remember when I learned a few years back, people would say, oh, gee, someone has breast cancer. Well, I can remember when I went in for a mammogram, and I am told by one of the people working there were 100 and some odd different types of breast cancer. And that was a big eye-opener for me, because I went, I just think of cancer being cancer. But you have
right.
all of these variables, and what works well for one is not necessarily going to work well for another. As a physician, because you are directly related to oncology, what do you feel has been the most significant improvement? Because cancer's been around forever, as far as I'm aware of.
Yeah.
What do you think has been the most significant improvement with cancer? And then I'm going to ask you another question. Why do you think it is so pervasive on so many levels today?
The second question is a lot easier to answer, although you wouldn't think so. I think it's so pervasive for a few reasons. One is that we are, for good reasons, we're living longer and not, as a population, not dying of things that killed our ancestors in the past, like infections, you know, pneumonias, other things. We have great drugs to fight viruses, fight infections. And so we tend to be living into our 60s and 70s and 80s. And cancer is, by and large, a disease of aging. You know, we do have, unfortunately, we have children and young people who get cancer. But for the most part, it's a disease of aging, and even at the cellular level. And so when cells continue to age, they have more problems and more issues, and the risk of cancer goes up. So that's one of the main reasons why we get it. We're also testing better. So our tests, in the past, people would die, quote, maybe of old age, but we really didn't know. Doctors and relatives didn't really know exactly what caused people's deaths, and now we have better tests to find that. So I think mm-hmm. for those two reasons, that's why cancer is more pervasive. It's going to be very difficult to separate aging from the development of cancer and malignancy in the future. The top, improvement in cancer care, that is a tough, because I think we've had a lot of really breakthrough medications for different types of drugs. So from a medical standpoint, I think there have been some major breakthroughs for certain subtypes of cancer. And then in my particular field, so I'm a radiation oncologist, and so my particular field, we've had a lot of technological advances that have allowed us to cure more people with less side effects, and so hurting people less. And then there's even been surgical advances, but I don't know that I would put those at the top of the list, certainly in the past couple decades.
One of the comments that you make in your book, and this is regarding statistics, that cancer kills nearly 600,000 people a year in the United States, very similar to the number of deaths caused by heart disease, And we all know of someone that's been touched by cancer. And you say the big four are breast, colorectal, lung, and prostate cancer. You call them the big four.
Right.
And you say 700
Yeah, so they're,
and,
they are the... Oh. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, so there I just say the big four because they, as far as prevalence and the amount of cancer that's diagnosed, those are by far the most common. And breast cancer, very commonly diagnosed in women, obviously, and we hear a lot about it, and I think there have been a lot of great advances in the treatment of breast cancer. It's very well funded at the national level, I think largely because the women, mostly women, there's some men obviously get breast cancer, but the patients who get breast cancer are very vocal, and it's really a great model for other cancer researchers to follow. If we could get other cancer, the fight against other cancers to be funded as well as breast cancer, we'd really be doing great. But breast cancer is common. Prostate cancer is very common in men. Lung cancer is by far the biggest killer. So lung cancer kills more people every year than breast, prostate, and colorectal put together. And so we really have not done a great, we haven't hit any home runs with lung cancer treatment. And mm-hmm. part of that is because it's quite often it's diagnosed very late.
Mm-hmm. Yes, many
but
of
those
these
are the
things,
biggies.
Yeah, many of these things, like you said, the lung cancer. I was talking with a neighbor who just went through an operation where she had been observed for a while and there was a spot on her pancreas and then something with her spleen. She's a lady that's in her 70s, and it's almost like what I would call a mechanical breakdown within the body. And she just came out of surgery, and probably if she hadn't had the surgery, where they removed whatever was affecting the pancreas, they saved the pancreas. But she probably is going to be able to enjoy a number of years ahead of her due to that surgery.
Right.
So it's amazing stuff. Now, you bring up something. You cover so much in your book. You wrote this book because with the experience you've had, the research that you've done, you wanted people to know that there are things that they can do for their health that can keep cancer at bay. You also have a lot of information in here about treatments, and I was really interested in your statement about radiation therapy, and you abbreviate it as RT. You say this can cause cancer, and that is something that I know occurred with a very dear friend of mine. She passed away a few years ago. And it was something that for her was a very, very much of a negative experience. Give us some background on that. What are the pros? What are the cons? What should someone, if this is proposed to them, be aware of and alert to? Because you say if you go and you study things on the internet, you've got so much misinformation that you may, you know, decide not to do something for yourself. So what are the pros and cons with it?
Yeah, I think for the most part, radiation therapy is largely much more beneficial than it's harmful. And so, and this is actually my particular field of treatment. So, I'm a radiation oncologist. So, occasionally, in very, very rare instances, an adult will be treated with radiation to cure a cancer and then years later develop a cancer as a result of that. The likelihood of that and the absolute incidence, the chance that's going to happen to someone, is well under 1%. It's more like a fraction of a percent. Whereas the amount of people who are cured as a result of radiation therapy being part of their treatment, whether it be after surgery or with chemotherapy, is very, very high. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people per year. So it can happen. It tends to happen more likely when the person who's being treated is young. So a classical case of this would be a teenage girl who's treated for Hodgkin's lymphoma that involves the lymph nodes potentially in the neck or chest. So this is just a classic example. A young girl gets treated and then 10, 15, 20 years later develops a breast cancer that's clearly within the area that received radiation. younger people tend to be more susceptible to radiation changes to their tissue, and then also, they also end up living longer to see that change happen. So if radiation causes a cancer, again, it's fairly rare, but it would happen more likely in someone who is treated as a young person and had decades to live afterward. So the likelihood of it in an older person is quite low.
You bring out in your book how significant nutrition is, and that when you went to medical school, and from what I understand, it's pretty much still the same situation, although it is gradually changing, the issue of nutrition and working with the body chemistry in a healthy way was not addressed. What turned you on to being aware that nutrition and what you put in your body can help prevent cancer from occurring? How did that happen with you? What turned the light on in your mind?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. I think in medical school, in most medical schools throughout the country, and it's still the case for the most part, we don't do a great job educating future doctors about the benefits of nutrition. And so there are registered dietitians who know much more about nutrition and overall health and cancer prevention than a lot of doctors. So if you have a doctor that knows a bit about nutrition and can speak with you about that, you definitely, that's a keeper. Because
mm-hmm.
that's not too common. I actually got more into nutrition in my side life and my extracurricular activities, doing long distance endurance sports and running and long distance triathlon. So I started to delve a little more into nutrition because it was somewhat of a need for survival, because you really do need to know a lot about nutrition in that regard. And then that in turn, with my job, I started to think more about what's the real data out there for which foods are better, and are there supplements that are really required for the best way to prevent cancer? And so, again, there's a lot of misinformation out there on the internet, and even published in folks publishing books about what you need to eat, and a lot of it is misinformation. And so, I really wanted to have that in part of the book, in the section on prevention, to help people say, hey, what are the basics? What do I really need to know? And what's really the key as far as nutrition goes?
Well, and there is the fact that people that don't smoke, smoking is a big negative, absolutely a big, big negative. I know my own father died from lung cancer. There are other people that I have known whose members of family, when they're heavy smokers, they have died because, you know, from emphysema or something else like my father. And
Right. These
are things, when you see it, you know that the carcinogens that are in the tobacco smoke are very deadly. It can also come from a working environment. We're becoming much more alert and aware to toxic substances and how the body sometimes will internalize them, store them, and it can eventually cause problems. There's so much that we are becoming aware of, which I think is great, and that's one of the things your book, When Cancer Hits Home, gives so much good detail about. Now, you go into testing, you talk about various types of testing, and then you go into various types of therapy. Now, some people would say, well, gee, you're a radiation oncologist. Why didn't you just stick with that? But you really talk about all kinds of things that people need to be aware of, everything from chemotherapy to immunotherapy to whatever else you wanted to cover here in the book. What prompted your curiosity that enabled you to step out of your own field of expertise and add in these other proponents?
A lot of it was my own experience with my family. And so, like you, I have had close relatives who have had lung cancer, and my mother-in-law actually passed away with lung cancer. I had my father, my father-in-law, so three out of our four parents had cancer, and I have all died of advanced cancer. So that was, I wanted to write it a little bit from that personal aspect, and
mm-hmm.
so to give it in addition to from the perspective of the cancer physician, but also just knowing what's out there. There are a lot of good books written by patients who have been through cancer treatment, breast cancer treatment, for instance. Lots of good biographies or survival journey, cancer journeys. And then there are other good books that are more textbooks focused on a single disease, but there aren't many good, I guess, guides, simple practical guides, a single reliable place you can turn for information about cancer. And so that's what I wanted to encompass with the book. And so I wanted to get a more of a global, down-to-earth, here's what you need to know in plain terms out there for people.
And certain parts of the world, like Taiwan and Japan and Africa, they will have certain kinds of cancers that affect their environment. And I found that quite interesting, that they're all, you know, it's all over the world in one form or another, and that every geological area has perhaps particular paradigms with it. What was the most intriguing when you were doing this study? What country or environment did you find that just fascinated you when you were doing this, that you would have said, gee whiz, I would never have expected this to be in this population?
It's a good question. I think a lot of it's very fascinating. You know, we have one of the classic examples is stomach cancer, which is actually what my dad died of. And it is getting to be fairly common. It's one of the top 20 cancers, and so that we write about it in the book. But in the U.S., it's getting more common, stomach and lower esophageal cancer, so where the esophagus connects to the stomach. That type of esophageal cancer is getting much more common. It's called adenocarcinoma, or a glandular type of cancer, somewhat similar to the cancer cells that are abnormal in most types of breast or prostate cancer. Well, it used to be that most esophageal cancers were squamous cell cancers, which are more from chronic irritation. And so when you look at certain countries like the Middle East, Iran, for instance, it depends somewhat on their culture, not necessarily their location, but the culture of drinking hot tea very frequently with the combination of very spicy foods, for instance. Those things tend to increase people's risk as a culture for cancers of the esophagus and of the stomach. And so I found that interesting, just culture by culture, what people eat and drink quite often can lead to a higher incidence of these type of cancers.
I think that the more we're able to collect information from different arenas of environment, and the more we're able to utilize our technologies to find out, and it's very sophisticated because a lot of this stuff can be carried in the body for years and years and years, and then all of a sudden, kaboom, either stress
right.
or be a change in the environment or just sheer age can make a difference in the physiological chemistry of a person. You have a number of cases that you talk about in the book. You have a fellow by the name of Clarence who ended up with a head and neck cancer, and you talk about brain tumors. I had a Scottish Terrier that died last year from a massive brain aneurysm. That's what I'll call it.
Sorry.
But there was a rupture in the brain, and the same things happen with people. And it's really fascinating how different areas of the body can be affected. When we talk about kidney cancer, we hear about pancreatic cancer, and people say, gee, if you get pancreatic cancer, it's a death knell because you'll be lucky if you have any time left at all once that is discovered. We think of Patrick Swayze, the actor who got so much coverage because he fought so hard. And he survived a lot longer than anybody ever anticipated he would. But eventually he succumbed to that condition. What would you say to anyone if they were, well, let's just make it across the board. There may be specifics that you could address. What do people generally need to be cognizant of? And in your book, you go into this in a great deal of detail, that cancer, what are some of the things that maybe they should heed that otherwise they would ignore?
That's a great question. So there are a few things that I think symptoms that patients never ignore. And in fact, I thought about this topic. I actually have a website called, I did have it after my own name, but people misspell McGuire so frequently that I changed it to thecancermd.com. But if folks go on there, you can find out the top 10 warning signs that you should never ignore. And so a couple of those. One is obviously changes in the breast. So for breast cancer, people always think about, okay, develop a lump. But one of the more aggressive types of breast cancer that a lot of people don't know about is called inflammatory breast cancer. And so one example would be a red breast that develops suddenly and doesn't go away with a course of antibiotics or anti-inflammatory medicines. And that is a very much a warning sign that if you have that develop and it doesn't go away with those medicines, you need to get to your doctor because it could be this. Now, it's not as common. It's like you said in the beginning of our talk, it's a little bit less common type of breast cancer, but it can be very aggressive. And so that's one thing for women. I think for both women and men, probably the top would be unexplained weight loss. So if you're not actively dieting or exercising and all of a sudden you realize that over the course of a month or 2 months, your weight's dropping 5, 8, 10, 15 pounds, there's got to be a reason for that. And quite often folks overlook it. And they just say, oh, well, I just must be, you know, suddenly more successful with my activities. But if you're not dramatically changing your activity level or your diet, there's no real reason that you should be losing weight unless there's some illness. And quite often, some of the more insidious types of cancers, they can start that way with weight loss, and then you might get a general, you know, you mentioned pancreatic cancer, some weight loss, some general pain, and then the pain progresses, and then it's diagnosed. But that would be one thing to always, always heed any unexplained weight loss.
Well, those are just a couple of tips, but I'll tell you, his book, Dr. Patrick McGuire's book, is loaded with information. And sometimes people will say, gee whiz, it's negative thinking when you start looking at the downside of information. No, it's not. When you can be aware of things and when you can have an understanding, and we're always learning, we'll never know it all, and this is a topic that is so frequently feared. And what Dr. McGuire has done in this book, he's addressed so many, the top 20 types of cancers, and there's just so much information about this that it gives you an understanding that you do have a choice, and you do have a capacity of enjoying wellness, even if you should be diagnosed with this. So it is something that I think is very informative, and the book is titled When Cancer Hits Home. And you can go to his website, thecancermd.com, thecancermd.com. This will give you something that you can pass along to a loved one or to anyone that you feel will benefit this information. Dr. McGuire, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. Are you still with me?
I am. It was a pleasure, Donna. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, we're here. I'm getting some kind of a beeping sound, so I thought maybe we had gotten disconnected. I'm very glad we haven't. Do you have a closing thought that you'd like to leave with my audience before we say goodbye?
I think it's very important, just to reiterate what you said, it's very important to understand that when you receive a cancer diagnosis, it does not have to be the end of a good quality of life, that there are lots of misconceptions out there about cancer. And so you owe it to yourself or a loved one who's diagnosed to really get information from a reliable source. And it doesn't certainly have to be my book, but I think you when you start to educate yourself a little bit and find out more, I think anxieties will fall away and things start to open up.
Well, again, Dr. McGuire, I appreciate your taking time out of your busy schedule to visit with us today. Thank you so much. Your book, When Cancer Hits Home, is a good read. I think in many ways it takes away a lot of the fear. You address nutrition, you address a number of things. Thank you very much, and continued success. And when you come out with your next book, let me know.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away. Lots of good things to share today.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call into if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, sit back, relax, and let me share with you the information that I receive mentally. So again, 888-815-9756. Well, we've got a dynamic week. We've got so many interesting people. That's one of the things I love about doing this show, is all of the diversity that I encounter. Now, tomorrow we're going to be talking business. Pat Sigmon is going to be with us. We're going to be talking about the 6 steps to creating profit. Now, that's always of interest to anybody. I don't care who you are. There's the story that goes around that you're having a party and there's a millionaire and a billionaire, and the millionaire goes to the billionaire and wants to know, how's it going? Well, it's just going really well. And, gee, have you reached your pinnacle? No, because there's always more that we can want. And that just seems to be a tale that goes on and on. Making a profit is very important. And it doesn't mean that someone's greedy or they're malicious or anything like that. Not that kind of portrayal. It's just doing business. And when we are healthy in our business, we can hire people and we can do more. It's when we do not have those funds available, and in today's economy, it's really a challenge. So tomorrow, Pat Sigmon is going to be with us, and we'll be talking about those 6 steps. And then on Wednesday, we'll be talking with Marcia Shaver. We're going to be talking about the artist's journey. Not only is Marcia a superb artist, but she did a trek across Spain that is just fascinating. So we talk about that. And then we're going to be talking on Thursday about how the sky is green and the grass is blue. A little creative spin on that. And that's going to be with Debbie Scott. And then on Friday, Miracles Are Made, Real Life Guide to Autism. And the woman, Lynette Louise, is quite a fascinating lady. She's a stand-up comic. That's right. This is a woman that's raised 8 kids. Woohoo! Anybody that's raised 8 children deserves a medal. I mean, it's just a lot of work, but that's how she got involved with dealing with autistic children. So we are going to be talking with her. So we've got a very interesting week, and I hope that you will be able to join us and also tell your friends about the programs that are coming up. If you're sort of feeling down in the dumps, those of us in the Pacific Northwest, we get absolutely ecstatic when the sun comes out, and then it seems like good old Father Gray decides to come in and preoccupy the area. So I've got a tip for you. If you're feeling down in the dumps and you just go, oh, I've got the Monday blahs, well, there's a little trick that you can do, and I'll share it with you after we talk to this caller. Welcome to the show, first name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi.
Hello?
Mary.
Hi, Mary, and where are you calling in from?
I'm calling from Memphis, Tennessee.
From Memphis. Wonderful.
Yes.
How are you guys faring with all of the tornadoes and all of that stuff that's been going on? Are you okay?
Yes, we are okay. You know, just, you know, with a lot of prayer and a lot of, you know, just reaching out, you know, to ones who are in need. You know, we are definitely, you know, a lot better now. You know, the floodwaters have receded, and now we're dealing with the heat, Donna.
Oh, phooey, you can keep that. I mean, we want sunshine out here. That automatically brings the heat. We've got so much
sun
that people feel like we're going to have moths growing between our toes pretty soon. So,
right.
Yeah, but that's typical for your part of the country this time of the year, that kind
of
humidity
and
heat.
Yes, it is.
Yes, that's just the way it goes. All right, let's get down to business with you, Mary. First of all, continue your education. There is a positioning that you wish to have within community where you are going to be more of a leader. Now, what I would like for you to do, because of your desire to serve community in a very unique way, you are going to be working with young people. And I would say I'm looking at between the ages of 22, 23 to 33. And they'd be more of the college age, and you are going to want to work with them, both the men and the young women, because you want to be able to pass along some good basics in the way of understanding and experience that you have gone through. And you're going to find that there are some people that will be your mentors that will really, really be an outstanding example for you. And these are women. I'm looking at three different women, and I'm looking at two men. They'll be very supportive of you. You are really going to be working very hard these next 5 years. There's no shortcuts here, but I don't see you asking for any. And I think that the result is going to be you're going to have some kind of an accreditation, some kind of a degree, if you will. This is going to enable you to walk the walk, not just talk the talk. And I'm seeing some people being of very significant influence to you that you will read about, that have passed on, that have some wonderful examples of how they demonstrated discipline and proper action in particular environments. And this is what you're going to do, but you're having to do this for you right now. And you've had a rough 2 years.
This, yes, I have.
There's been a lot of disappointment. You have had people where you thought they had integrity, they didn't. You have had physiological situations, physical conditions that have challenged you. You have also been aware of an emptiness when it comes to what I describe as family. And when I see an emptiness, it's as if they have to grow through something and you want to help, but you can't. You've got to let them walk their own journey. So you've really gone through a lot of learning just in the past couple of years. And I think that this is one of the reasons why developing your leadership skills is so important. So the library, I think, is going to be one of your best buddies. And you're going to find a lot of resources there and a lot of support there. So utilize it. But you've got your work cut out for you. No shortcuts. But by the time you finish what you need to do, even though it's going to be sort of tough, once you do it, you are going to be so clear about where you want to go, what you want to do, and how you want to do it. And you're going to have the support you desire because you will have proven to people what you're capable of doing. And that's really good. So,
wow.
Again, it's going to be very demanding, but mm-hmm. it's going to be worth every step that you take. Do you have a question for me?
Yes, I have been going through some very strange dynamics, you know, with my family.
Mm-hmm.
And all I have tried to do is just reach out, show compassionate, love and care, for my family. And it seems as though, they are trying to, come at me and attack me, for no reason. And I have, tried to take all of the emotions and the feelings, out of how I have been dealing with this, but it hurts, when your own blood, just turns on you and lie on you for no reason.
Well, I think I'd need some more specific. Can you give me a specific example? You
yes,
don't have to mention names.
My oldest sister, she's extremely sickly. She has diabetes. She has, arthritis that it has, riddled her body, and she just had surgery, just a little while ago. And I went over, and I stayed with her, for 5 days. I took care of her, and I didn't do this, for her. I didn't do it for me. I did it because God put it on, placed it on my heart,
mm-hmm.
to do it. And when I come back home, I hear, my other sisters, going, oh, she didn't do this and she didn't do that and blah, blah, blah. And it has just floored me, and I just don't understand it.
Well, I,
really
I think what you're getting a good dose of is human nature. And
yeah.
It's a good thing not to take it personally. You did what you wanted to do for your sister, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Your other sister, whatever it is that's going on with them, and they're having their moments of judgment here, and that's okay. However, you just need to be clear in your mind why you did something, and that's
right.
All that's important. You did it because for you it was the right thing to do.
Exactly.
If they're criticizing you because of that, then what you might want to do is say, I'll think about what you've said, and I appreciate your comment, but don't wallow in the conversation. Shift
okay.
the conversation.
Okay.
Because what happens then is that it becomes a bashing environment. Oh, blah, 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 blah,
yes.
blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Well, pettiness, jealousies, bad moods, all kinds of things can come out in that discourse, and you don't want to waste your time with that.
That's why when I came home, I just turned my phone off, because I told my other sisters, none of this happened, I took care of her, with the best of care, I gave her the best of love, and that was all right, with me, as long as, the universal God looked down and smiled on me for reaching out and showing, unselfish love to my sister. That's all that matters to me.
And that's all that matters. So when someone makes a comment, all you need to do is listen and say, I'm going to think about what you've said. I appreciate
mm-hmm.
your comment, and then start talking about a chocolate cake recipe. Shift it real fast. And say, I found this one that has no calories in it whatsoever. You interested? Or, gee whiz, the plumbing on my toilet just exploded. I've got to go. You can come up with something, but just shift out of the conversation because it's
right.
very easy to stay there. So you're turning off your phone. It's fine. But part of this that you're going through right now is learning how to detach. Because, you
yeah.
see, it has nothing to do with you. You took an action. You did something that for you was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you were doing it to be a martyr or something like this, then that's a whole different scenario. But your sister needed assistance. You were happy to do that. She had had surgery, and that's good. It made you feel good. Your sister was comfortable. You left her. She's capable of doing things on her own. But you can't babysit her all the time. So
exactly.
If you get, you know, if you get somebody that's criticizing, again, just neutralize it. Say, you've
okay.
given me something to think about. And then maybe later on say, I thought about what you said, and I want you to know my positioning. And you can say it in very short, complete sentences. Don't elaborate. And then move on.
Okay.
This is
Thank
a training.
Thank you so very kindly.
Yeah, this is such a training scope for you. It's just amazing. None of us like it,
amazing.
I guarantee you.
You are amazing, and I thank God for you once again. God bless, and keep just doing what you're doing.
Oh, Mary, you're a sweetheart. Thanks so much. Be sure and tell your friends about the show.
I most certainly will.
All right, my dear. You have a good
day.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a minute. Ready for a chocolate recipe? Okay, we'll be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny. They will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in every...
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.DelphiInternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and her website is www.DelphiInternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Got that pad of paper and pen handy? I have to tell you, I had a nice little salad recipe, and I thought, oh, this is going to be a good thing. But then I came across this recipe, banana and coconut cheesecake. All right, I have to tell you, I have a love affair with chocolate. I just think it's the greatest stuff, and I also love cheesecake. So when I found this recipe, I said, okay, I'll leave the salad for another healthy day. I really believe that food is something that we should enjoy. And one of the reasons I think that there's such a challenge in today's world is that there's really a lot of delicious foods out there. But having some of it is not a bad thing. And cheesecake is so yummy. The thing is that when you do have it, if you're like me, you always want a lot of people around so you don't have leftovers, because if it's good, and this is good, well, you're going to go back for seconds, thirds, fourths, fifths, over a period of maybe a week. But unless you're out there running 16 marathons a week, it's going to end up making you look as round and firm and maybe as fully packed as this cheesecake. So let me give you the recipe. Banana and coconut. Now, this actually can serve 10 people. So here's what you're going to need in the way of ingredients. It's really, really easy. You're going to need 8 ounces of chocolate chip cookies. 8 ounces. And with this, you need to measure. So you want to use a scale when you measure this stuff. You're going to need 4 tablespoons of butter. 4 tablespoons of butter. I'd recommend the salted butter, because the salt adds to the other ingredients. It's an amazing thing. Lots of times people say, well, we have too much salt in food. Well, unless you're eating a lot of processed foods, you need to have salt in your diet. So salted butter really, in this case, will enhance the flavors of the chocolate and the cream cheese and the sugar and the coconut and all the other ingredients I'm going to give you. Okay, so 4 tablespoons of butter, 1.5 cups of cream cheese, 1.5 cups of cream cheese, 1/3 of a cup of super fine sugar, 1/3 of a cup of super fine sugar, 1/2 cup of grated fresh coconut. Now, if that's not convenient, use the bag kind. Doesn't make any difference, but you need 1/2 cup of grated fresh coconut, preferably. 2 tablespoons of coconut-flavored liqueur. 2 tablespoons of coconut-flavored liqueur. You're going to need 2 ripe bananas, and you don't want them so ripe that they got black spots. That's not what you want. You just want it so that it's still got that wonderful firmness, yet it's still ripe. You're going to need 4.5 ounces of dark chocolate, 4.5 ounces of dark chocolate, 1 envelope of plain gelatin, 1 envelope of plain gelatin, 3 tablespoons of water, 2/3 of a cup of heavy cream, no low-fat stuff. This is the real thing. This is what we want. Now, the decoration that's going to be going on the cake, the cheesecake, is a banana. You're going to need a little bit of lemon juice and a little melted chocolate, but we'll get to that at the end. This is what you do. With the 8 ounces of chocolate chip cookies, you want to put them in a plastic bag and crush them with a rolling pin, and then you want to pour them into a mixing bowl. If you've got one of those small food processors, you can just pop them in there and push the button, and you're going to have them all ready to go. You want to melt your butter, your 4 tablespoons of butter, and you want to stir it into your cookie crumbs until all the crumbs are well coated. And then you take that cookie crumb mixture and you press it into the base and up the sides of an 8-inch springform pan. Now, the cream cheese and superfine sugar, you're going to want to beat them until they're really well combined. Then you're going to beat in the grated coconut and the coconut-flavored liqueur. Now, the 2 bananas, you need to mash them and then add them into the cream cheese mixture and just put the beater on and just let it go at it for about 30 seconds. And then the dark chocolate, if you have that in a bowl over warm water while you're doing the mixing, then it's going to melt very nicely. And you melt that dark chocolate, and then, of course, you just pour it right into the cream cheese mixture. Now, the gelatin you want to put over the 3 tablespoons of water, and you allow it to become sort of spongy. Now, if you have a pan and you fill it with hot water, you put the bowl that you have the gelatin and tablespoons of water, that mixture, the 3 tablespoons, you put it over the warm water that you've got on the stove, and you stir it until it totally dissolves. After it's dissolved, you take it off of the pan that you've put it over, of the hot water, and then you put it into your cheesecake mixture. And you're going to then, that's mixing away, take your heavy cream and beat it until it starts holding its shape. You don't want to beat it until it gets extremely stiff. You just want to beat it until it's just beginning to hold its shape. Then you take that and gently stir it into the chocolate mixture. And then you very carefully take a spatula and just gently force the mixture, the cheesecake mixture, into the cookie-lined springform pan. And put a piece of saran wrap over the top of it, put it in the refrigerator, and let it chill. And I'd recommend, a couple of hours. And when you're ready to serve it, because then it's going to be very, very firm, you take a banana and you slice it, toss it in the lemon juice, and arrange the sliced banana around the edge of the cheesecake. And then if you want, take some chocolate, nuke it in the microwave until it's liquidy, and then just make a chocolate design over the top of the cake and allow it to set. It'll just set in a couple of minutes. I love to use chocolate chips. I like especially the Ghirardelli dark chocolate. That's one of my favorites. But there you've got a sumptuous, delicious, yummy chocolate cheesecake, and it will keep in your refrigerator if you made it the day before, like for a party. Ooh, what a way to go. Donna Sebo here. I'm going to have to share some other things with you tomorrow. Remember always, You're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. We'll be talking about how you can make a profit tomorrow. So I hope you'll join us. Donna Sebo here. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.